Bus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. For the first time since 2015, the Ohio State Buckeyes are number one in the preseason coaches poll. OSU received 38 of 72 first-place votes. Indiana got 14, but are sixth to start the season. Hoosiers are behind number two Oregon, number three Georgia, number four Texas, and number five Notre Dame. Buckeyes will play at Texas September 12th. OSU opens fall camp tomorrow morning. The fan will be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center for camp coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Associated Press will unveil their preseason top 25 next Friday at noon. In the NFL, the Panthers play the Cardinals tomorrow night in the Hall of Fame game. Arizona will start rookie quarterback Carson Beck against Kenny Pickett for Carolina. And in baseball Tuesday, the Mets beat the Guardians 6-2. Reds top the Athletics 5-4. This update is sponsored by Vermeer Heartland. Vermeer Heartland opens in Columbus August 3rd. Get the Vermeer equipment you trust. Genuine parts, expert service. Visit VermeerHL.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tiberi here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Both the boys with you for the next three. Loaded up on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program, 9:30. What exactly is going on down at Nationwide? We will try to sift through what has been a pretty interesting summer, to say the least, for the Columbus Blue Jackets coming up in about 38 minutes from now. It is a Hey Guys First Friday. Get your Hey Guys questions into the fellas. We will do that at 10 o'clock. Jake Trotter going to drop by at 10:30. 11 o'clock, 20 most interesting programs continues with the Penn State Nittany Lions. Our old buddy Rich Scarcella is going to join us at 11:30 on that. We will get you officially endorsed in three things at the end of the program. But for the first time since 2015, Ohio State will start the season number one in the preseason coaches poll. That came out just after our show aired yesterday. First time since 15 that the Buckeyes have been number one overall. In terms of first place voting, Ohio State received 38 of those first place votes. But I think when you look at the voting, you see, and if you pay attention to 20 most interesting programs, I think you're probably hearing this too. There's a wide variety of teams who have a shot to win this thing. There are several that percolate towards the top, and they are the ones who have gotten the votes in this thing. Obviously, Ohio State leading the way with 38 first-place votes. Oregon, fellow Big Ten member, with six. Georgia had seven. Texas with two. They were preseason number one a year ago. Notre Dame with five, and then Indiana with 15. By the way, in about 10 minutes, I'll tell you how Indiana buoyed their chances to repeat as national champions overnight with a little bit of a loophole they took advantage of. Get you the details on that. I could not find a year-by-year preseason coaches poll ranking for Ohio State that was easy to find in terms of a preseason one. But I did find an AP version, and usually these two kind of mirror each other. And I was just curious, like going back to the year 2000, let's say, where did Ohio State start each season since 2000? So this is from 2000 working its way up. So in 2000, they started 16th. 2001, they were 23rd. 02, they were 13th. Harbinger of things to come. 03, they were 2. 04, they were 9. 05, they were 6. 06, they were 1. 07, they were 11 and got all the way back to the national title game. That would have been my first season covering the team. 2008, they were 2. 9, they were 6. 10, they were 2. 11 and 12. So this is the end of Tress into the beginning of Meyer. They were 18. 18. Then they went 2. This is all Urban now. 2-5-1-6-2-5. That's with Urban. Ryan Day starting the year in the AP, not the coaches, albeit, but in the AP starting in 2019. 5-2-4-2-3-2-3, and now 1, at least in the coaches. My guess is they will be number 1 in the AP as well. The only stretch that's even remotely similar to this in Ohio State history in terms of preseason poll greatness is really Woody. The height of Woody from 69 until 1980. 69, they start 1, 71, 71, 11, 72, 3, 73, 2, 74, 2, 75, 4, 76, 4, 77, 5, 78, 7, and then 1981. So that is the stretch that of greatness, right? That's the 10-year war stretch and all of those things. But we are in, and I think we've done a pretty good job of being aware of this. It's certainly never something that's lost on me. We are in the middle of the golden age of Ohio State football. That just so happens that the golden age of Ohio State football has lasted 27 seasons. That's just the reality of it. Like, there's not another program in the country that can go back 27 seasons, and the worst you were ranked was 23rd all the way back in 01. There hasn't been a season that Ohio State has started ranked anything higher in the AP than 6 going back to 2012 when they were 18. And that was with Urban and all the sanctions and all the way. By the way, in 2012, of course, they went undefeated. 2011, that's the year Pryor's ruled ineligible and DeVere and all those poor guys, and they were rated 18th. But other than that, it's top 5 in the country most of the time, and this year they start at number 1 in the country. The other thing that's pretty interesting about this to me, guys, is this is a team that has a new offensive coordinator. This is a team that is replacing 3 top 15 picks on the defensive side and the number 1 receiver off the board in the NFL draft, and nobody even blinks. They have questions. They have questions on defense, big questions on defense. And the guys that they lost were, in the case of Caleb Downs, generational type player. When you talk about one of the greatest safeties to ever play college football, when you talk about what Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese represented, when you talk about Carnell Tate opposite Jeremiah Smith and what that represented, they replaced all of those guys, and they're going to start 1. It's 2 things. 1, it's the greatness of the brand. It's the greatness of the program. It's the greatness of the offense. The fact that you have a Heisman finalist coming back and the best player in college football and Bo Jackson at running back and a great offensive line, and you were really good in the portal, and everybody knows you have pros everywhere because you're NFLU. It's certainly all of those things. And it's also, I think, the parity that's happened in the sport with free transfer and NIL and some of this talent being spread out around the country. I mean, it's pretty rare to see a preseason poll where you have 6 teams receive first place votes for number 1 overall. That usually there's a little bit more consensus than that. That is not the case here. 6 full teams, and you could make an argument for Miami. You could make an argument for Ole Miss. You could make an argument for other teams on this list. So to me, I think it speaks to those 2 things, the greatness of Ohio State and the consistent greatness of the program, and also that we now live in a world where we got a little bit of parity on our hands, guys.
Yeah, Ohio State's got questions. So does everybody else. You talk about that vote disparity. Ohio State with 38. Indiana got 14 first place votes, but the Hoosiers start at 6.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon got 6 first place votes. They start at 2. Georgia 7. They start at 3. Notre Dame 5. They start at 5. Texas 2, but they start at 4. So questions for Ohio State, I think, are just less than the questions for the rest of the top 10. And then the top 25, and we'll get into it later with higher or lower, just feel like, oh, we got to put somebody for like the 6th year in a row. It feels like, right. Well, we got to do 25 teams in this? And yes, because you want to do preseason polls because you're so beholden to these preseason list season. Yeah, you got to put 25 teams in this list. Ohio State, not surprising at all to me that they're first in this coaches poll. Be very interested to see if the AP voters go along with the coaches or the SIDs or whomever actually votes in this coaches poll that was released yesterday. But all of those teams that got first place votes, and I would even go with Miami and Texas A&M, you could talk, I guess I'll just stop at Miami, not so much Texas A&M, but you could talk me into all of those being top 1, top 2 in the country to start this year, because Indiana won it last year. So anything's possible now.
Yeah.
I am surprised that Ohio State was number 1, and I'm more surprised by how much they were. Mm-hmm. Number 1, that they got 38 first place votes. And Bo, I think that goes back to the brand and the consistency, and you expect Ohio State to be there every year. I guess I kept thinking people were going to look at Ohio State like, oh my gosh, they lost three top 12 picks off of their defense. But I think people realize that Ohio State the year before lost eight guys off of the number one defense in the country, and they ran it back and were the number one defense in the country again. So I think people believe in what Ryan Day is doing. I think people believe in what Matt Patricia is doing on the defensive side of the ball. I think people believe that Arthur Smith will come in here and have an impact on this offense with his NFL experience. And I think people believe in Jeremiah Smith and Julian Sayin. And I think that's huge. I thought Oregon might be number one. I actually thought Texas might be number one. I'm surprised Texas is number four because Arch Manning is everybody's darling. But it's nice
maybe
to see
just
the Buckeyes
learn from last year.
Could be.
Maybe.
It could be. But it's nice to see the Buckeyes get some respect.
Well, they get it, and they've earned all of it over 50 years and these incredible stretches. But I mean, yeah, I think, you know, here's the other thing as a poll voter. You, whether you're a coach or you're the AP, and I've done the AP vote, did that a couple of years. Like Ohio State's not going to embarrass you. You put the Buckeyes number one in your preseason poll, Ohio State's not going 6-5.
They're finishing top 10.
They're going to finish top 5 and 6 in the country. Like, they're going to go at worst 10-2. Like, you're not going to look back and go, God, what was I thinking? I bet gave Ohio State first place votes. Worst case scenario, this team's 10-2 and ranked 6th in the country because they play the most ambitious schedule in the country. So, like, that's the worst case scenario. And by the way, that this defense gets better and everybody can kind of see how this thing tracks. So, I think it could have been Oregon. It could have been Ohio State. It could have been Notre Dame. You could have gone Indiana too. And just a lot of people do that. They go to Ric Flair to beat the man. You got to beat the man. So I think that's where your 14 votes come in on that one. By the way, if they had the information that we're going to get to in a second, I think that even buoys Indiana's chances because a position of strength becomes even stronger for the Hoosiers overnight. So we'll get you updated on that. We had an SEC honk who was making some just, I guess it's not a lie if you believe it, Jerry. Like, don't worry about it, I guess, is what Pete Burns of the SEC Network did. So we'll have a little fun at his expense. Take a look at this poll a little longer and get you the details on Indiana adding bigly to a roster that was already pretty dang good. We'll get to all of that. We're off and running on a First Friday Bishop and Friends right here.
Retirement from football. Hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking at sunny to partly cloudy skies here for today with highs into the upper 80s this afternoon. Also tracking the chance for a few showers and storms mainly in the afternoon east of Interstate 71. We'll see more of the same here for your Thursday with highs into the upper 80s and some sunshine around. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who?
Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Well, homes in Columbus certainly know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com for that. Do you want to spank Pete Burns or do you want to do Cignetti's got another card up his sleeve?
So the thing with let's do Cignetti because Pete Burns just wanted to be the main character of football Twitter yesterday and he accomplished his goal.
Okay, so we'll get to him in a second. So you guys, I don't know if you were paying attention to this or not, but this happened at the exact around the same time. Reese, Bake, maybe you guys can help me. I want to say this was in a few hours of the news that the SEC and the Big Ten decided to kind of go it together with the Save College Sports Act. Around this time, certainly within a day or two, there's a district court ruling in Colorado which cleared fifth-year eligibles going back to 2022 high school graduation. So it allowed for all of those players. I know we talked about it on the show, but you didn't know like if any of it would be anything tangible. So something tangible has happened. Yesterday, ESPN's Pete Thamel, among others, reported that Indiana defensive lineman Stephen Daly will return to the Hoosiers for his fifth season. So he's a former Kent State transfer, was cleared by IU officials for a fifth and final year in the wake of this ruling in Colorado, missed the entire playoff after suffering a knee injury during the postgame celebration following the Hoosiers' win over the Buckeyes in the Big Ten championship game. Is he good? Yeah, he's real good. He was honorable mention all Big Ten last year, ranked third nationally with 19 tackles for loss and 5.5 sacks. So we just did Indiana, Tuesday. One of the things that we talked about in terms of their strengths was their defensive front. Well, now it got better. It got better in a big way. And so it's going to be rare to find these instances of guys who couldn't, what's the way to phrase this? Maybe were not drafted the way that they had wanted to, or did not have a professional view of them the way that they expected, but are tremendous college players. Those type of guys paratrooping back in. This is our first example of it. This is a really good player who was coming off an injury, was not drafted in the NFL, and so now finds himself able to play again in college, make probably a decent paycheck, and also play a fifth year and perhaps buoy his draft status. So this is them taking full advantage of this loophole that was opened by the Colorado judge.
And I think Texas is going to be starting a guy on their offensive line that did the same thing. I think he... and his name escapes me, but went to Brown's rookie minicamp and then I think Texans rookie minicamp.
Okay.
But because of this rule, this injunction ruling Friday, this past Friday, he's going to be able to join the Longhorns again. I know Steve Sarkisian 2 weeks ago at SEC Media Days was asked about him and said, yeah, we'd be thrilled to have him back. And then with this defensive tackle yesterday for Indiana, he hurt his knee in that Big Ten championship game. And I think what was... draft prospects that weren't the highest, I think that kind of sunk things. Mm-hmm. So where he'd be out of football for a little bit of time anyway, then this ruling comes out. Because we'd heard some rumblings back April or May that this was going to happen, because we'd thought like Bruce Thornton or Christoph Tilley could rejoin the basketball Buckeyes, who have a roster spot open, that this could impact for Jake Diebler and company. But put to the footballness of it, yeah, this is two teams are going to benefit. Two teams in the top 10 are going to benefit from this, and then some. Like, the ripple effects of this are going to be felt for about a week or two.
Two national title contenders.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, they're going to benefit. Now, it sounds like the NCAA is supposed to have a petition to block this injunction on Friday. So later this week, sometime this week, they're rushing together to get this together to stop this. It's very interesting, and Daly got hurt in the post-game celebration, right? Like, he didn't get hurt in the Big Ten championship game.
No.
He got hurt in the celebration.
In the celebration,
partying too hard.
And
I get it.
He missed the national championship run, and from everything I understand, he would have been drafted if it wasn't for this. And I wonder if he was hoping this was coming down the pipeline, and he's just been avoiding NFL teams and signing because, well, I can make more money if I go back to Indiana.
Well, he could. You're right, and he's right. He could make more money if he goes back to Indiana. And if that is the case, I'm not. I'll be very candid with you. Know what you don't know, and I don't know if he pursued an NFL career. I'm not following him. I don't know if he was trying to go through the rookie mini camps or trying to impress NFL. I have no idea about that. What I do remember him from last year. I remember him in the Big Ten championship game, and I remember the impact he had. And I know that Indiana has a strength, and one of them is on their defensive front. And now it got better. So. In terms of the injunction that the NCAA is trying to stop, put in there, you said that's coming in 2 days.
By Friday, they
said. They don't ever win these things. They've tried with Chambliss. They've tried with, I guess they beat Pavia back. Is he the only one? It's very rare for them to get a win in these things.
Joey Aguilar get told no thanks?
Maybe,
I guess the thing with me on this is, you guys already graduated. You used up your eligibility before this rule changed. I don't understand why a rule changes. We got to go, well, I deserved it too before the rule changed. Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. That was the rule. Like, if I get a speeding ticket tomorrow for going 56 and a 55, and then that changes to a 65-mile-an-hour road. Can I go back and fight it
Get yourself a good lawyer and pick the right judge.
We do this all the time. We always relitigate. We want to relitigate the past. We do it with history. We do it with sports. We do it with all of it. Like, I'm with you on this. But I also, because of just, there's part of me that likes to watch the world burn a little bit, especially when it comes to the NCAA. And they've made their own bed with all of this stuff. And the NCAA, of course, is university presidents and athletic directors and people in power. They've made this bed that they're trying to sleep in. And it feels like every time they're about ready to doze off, somebody lights a corner of it on fire. And there is something fun about that because, again, they made the bed. So that will certainly help Indiana's chances in a big, big way. He's a really good player. Yesterday, Pete Burns of ESPN, who does the SEC, I guess this is, my kids call this rage bait. Like, they will rage bait.
I think it's unintentional, so like, rage bait.
Do you think his is unintentional, or do you think it was intentional?
It was intentional to bait Big Ten fans. It was intentional to bait Ohio State, Indiana fans. But yeah. I think he messed up. I just didn't think he counted correctly.
Do you think he just considers Ohio State different than the Big Ten? Like, he doesn't even consider Ohio State in the Big
Oregon
Ten?
Oregon, too.
I think he forgot Oregon and USC are in the Big Ten, if I'm to be candid. That's what I think happened. I don't think it was rage bait.
He fell into it.
I think he didn't count, and I think he didn't count those two teams as Big Ten teams. So he put out a tweet yesterday, 9 SEC schools play at least 5 of the top 25 teams in the coaches poll. Not a single Big Ten team plays 5. Efficient work. Well, it doesn't take very long to look at a coaches poll, look at the team ranked number 1 and go, oh, Oregon, yeah, they play them. Texas, yep. Indiana, yep. USC, yep. Michigan, yep. Iowa, yep. That's 6. That counts to 6. By the way, Washington, Penn State also ranked in the top 25 for the Big Ten as well. So my thinking is that he just did a quick look at this and forgot that Oregon and USC are in the Big Ten.
He wanted to dunk on the conference, but also forgot.
But forgot. I don't think he was rage bait. I don't think he was like when NBC says nice dad bod to me, like that's his rage bait. Like it's not that.
So he grabbed the ball to dunk and didn't realize he was going towards the wrong hoop, basically.
That's what I think. I think he did. I think he just counted and didn't do it. By the way, like we're still at the point where that conference is how could that conference be chesty about anything? Play for a title. Can you just play for one? Can you get to the game even? They haven't even done that. So, like, we're punching below our weight class.
You don't have to be the best. Nick Saban said so.
Yeah, that was funny. I think because I was out SEC Media Week. Yeah. I missed that. I missed the ability to comment.
Nick Saban said you don't have to win it. Be the best.
He also said he wished that Power 4 teams played 15 Power 4 or 12 Power 4 games.
Not when he coached at Alabama.
Right. Coach Nick Saban would have held you under the water till the bubble stopped.
He absolutely would have. Yeah.
That's what maybe I guess when kids on vacation.
Maybe on his Alabama, where he just got to keep all of the recruits. There's a funny guy in Memphis named Chris Vernon. He does some stuff with the Ringer on the NBA. He gave a great kind of diatribe yesterday on his show about why the SEC fell apart, and he said they were all cheating like crazy, and now they can't because it's all legal.
And he added that he would be at dinners with boosters of Alabama and Auburn, and they would just be openly bragging about it. It's we all kind of knew that, but it's great to hear him talk about that and then to hear them in kind of like the same set of people go, well, this isn't fair.
We didn't even know how to handle it. I know we're up against it, but we didn't even know how to handle it. Remember the first year when everyone was coming at us for the $20 million roster and everyone was all defensive that we spent $20 million on a national championship team. And we were up here on this show saying like, yeah, so what? When do you get a load of what we do next year? What do you say we do in 2 years?
Like $20 million, cheap.
It's baby stuff alongside of what's going on now. All right. I was hesitant to get into this too much on the show just because, again, one thing that through my years of doing this is I don't want to talk about what I don't know about. And I'll be candid with you. I don't know a lot about what's going, but there's a lot of smoke in regards to the Blue Jackets, and we got to at least take a look at it. And we'll do it coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up,
Jew? Sponsored by Apex Pros. The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. So the hell did I do? Oh, I watched Stand By Me last night. I watched, which I hadn't seen in forever, so I watched that. And I was just about ready, ended right around 11, so got ready for bed and was checking one last look at the scrolls and hop on the X, and I see Brother Bone fighting the fight of good fights about relocation for Blue Jackets and retweeting NHL.com stories, and I'm like, what? What happened? Like, all I wanted to do was watch Vern and LaChance and the boys, Chambers and the boys, cruise through Maine and look for a dead body. And I go to bed, and all of a sudden the Blue Jackets are moving. Okay, so how do we get here? Well, first of all, I think we need to have proper context. So professional sports, and we saw this, the most famous example of this is the Seattle Supersonics. The most recent example of this is the Arizona Coyotes. There is fear that an example of this could be happening in Portland. So what happens is new guy buys team, new entity buys team. It strips it down to the studs so that it is something that looks, well, hell, we dealt with this with Precourt at the Apex level. I mean, this, the most ridiculous level of it was what he did to the crew. So we've lived this, right here in town in that sense. But, and he did it even crazier. Like he completely, that was really duplicitous. Here's the reality. So you tear it down and you make it so that there's no interest, and then you move the team. That's the playbook. Now you can do it in a case like Seattle where the fan base never really didn't show up. I mean, that's, you know, for anybody saying, well, they stopped. No, they didn't. No, Sonics fans didn't stop going. They had Durant. They were ready to go. He just wanted to move to Oklahoma City because he was from there, and he did. Phoenix was different. The league tried forever to get Phoenix going. They just couldn't get a stadium done. They tried everywhere for arenas, couldn't get it done. Support wasn't there. My God, they were playing at Arizona State's facility by the time they were at the end. It was appropriate for them to go. There was no path forward in Phoenix. The Portland one will be an interesting one because it's a diehard fan base. It appears that guy is of interest of moving that team to Las Vegas or Seattle or who knows, maybe even Raleigh. We'll see. That's where his NHL team is. So what does this have to do with the Blue Jackets? Well, this has been a very tough summer for them in terms of all of it, going all the way back to the Werenski stuff, which we dealt with when that was going on, to more recently, the decisions that were made around Bob McElliott and then great friend of the program, Jeff Svoboda, to kind of trim down who was on their payroll from a media standpoint. So they got rid of the radio voice of the Blue Jackets, Bob McElliott, and they're going to simulcast the television product, with Steve and Jody on that. And then Jeff was their writer. And they got rid of Jeff yesterday, and we commented on it, but I didn't know the exact details on it. We do know those details now. So Awful Announcing started to pay attention to this, and Brian Hedger, who does a spectacular job covering the Jackets for the Dispatch, he was doing an X, like Q&A is kind of what it was. And he was talking a little bit about the beat, and he tweeted out yesterday that the 17-18 season was peak for media beat. The Athletic had 3 beat writers for the Blue Jackets. The Dispatch had 2 plus Mike Arace. The RSN had its TV crew, Bobby Mack on the radio, and he was the Jackets insider. All but Arace traveled every single road game. It's almost totally gutted now. Willie Lutz responded to him on the X. He said, it feels like they're trying to get relocated. Brian wrote, I'd like to disagree with you, but things definitely feel dire right now. Then Brian clarified that. This will be my last comment because Awful Announcing ran with it. They're great people. They saw it and they reported on it. This will be my last comment on CBGA relocation. Awful Announcing's reporting, I said there were relocation concerns. I did not intend to imply that at all. I replied to a comment by saying it feels dire after they cut 2 good people, team employees. That's it. So there's a little smoke here, not from a relocation standpoint, but from a, just take whatever you feel about any of it out of the question and just say that this is an entity And if you are gearing up to sell an entity, this is kind of the stuff that you do. You tear it down to the studs to make it, you've all seen this in corporate America, you tear it down to the studs to make it seem like it's much more profitable than it is, and it's much more appealing than it is, and then you sell it to the highest bidder. I've heard, now, and the McConnell family is obviously very quiet and close to the vest ownership, and has been really all the way back to Mr. Mack. Like, that's kind of been their MO the whole way. So, I would be shocked if the Columbus Blue Jackets play anywhere else other than Columbus, Ohio. I would. I think that there are local investors that would jump all over this. They do have some financial issues that are very real. And you've seen some of the details in terms of their operating, their revenue and operating costs and all of these things. And certainly they are not the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're not the Kings. They're not the Edmonton Oilers. They're not those type of things. So like financially, it's a little different operating these and some of these other NHL teams. And it's costing more to run an NHL team than it ever has before. Salary caps going up, so forth and so on. So you have to have the stomach for it. I don't think we are at DEFCON 1 at all right now. And by the way, that's the most severe. But I do think that the DEFCON conversation is open, not in relocation, but just it's kind of the Windhorse thing. What is going on in Utah? And that's kind of been the summer of the Blue Jackets. What is going on with the Blue Jackets? Bake, you're closer than either Reese or I to following all of this. What do you make of this summer so far at in CBJ land?
I think it's been a terrible summer, quite frankly. I think I gave Don Waddell a pass last year with the salary cap going up and almost everybody kept all their players, that it was really, really hard to improve your team. I don't think that was the case this year. We saw a ton of trades, a ton of moves, and the Jackets made the trade to bring Valeri Nichushkin in, but then Mason Marchment went bye-bye. And if you let Mason Marchment go bye-bye, that was just a replacement for him. Your defense isn't any different than it was. Zach Werenski's unhappy. I don't know Zach Werenski's unhappy, but he wasn't happy that things got out the way they did about his situation.
Yeah.
I still wonder how that's going to play in the locker room this year. And with him going forward, like, I still don't think we have an answer with what he's going to do next year when his contract is extended.
I think you might have an answer.
So Adam Fantilli's still not signed.
So here's what I'm curious, though. Do you think that this points to something bigger than just them not? Is there something more afoot than just them not making moves to improve the team?
I think there are issues with losing the RSN money in the TV revenue that comes. I think those issues are real. Now, that shouldn't have anything to do with Adam Fantilli, but maybe it has something to do with not wanting to spend a little more. But once Fantilli's contract is done, they're going to be close to the salary cap. I think the salary cap this year is 104, and if Fantilli comes in around 15, I think they're going to put that's going to put them at like $100 million for their cap. So they're spending close to the top of the cap. If you remember, I didn't think the Zach Werenski thing was anything. I thought that it was people just saying, well, Dylan Larkin asked for a trade.
Right.
And then people associated Zach Werenski. Could he be next? And then NHL guys had to ask about it and it became a thing. And that obviously wasn't true. I wonder if Brian Hedger, in his reply to Mr. Lutz, if he says things definitely feel dire right now and doesn't say, I'd like to disagree with you at the beginning of that, if this is not a story.
Maybe.
But I'm not going to say no anymore because I thought the Zach Werenski thing was nothing.
Yeah.
Certainly more red yarn on the corkboard where they're cutting positions. They're not going to be doing the same kind of production. So they're saving money there. They're not going to spend on a player you thought would be a no-brainer when everyone else around the league is spending on their younger talent with similar numbers. and you're kind of still waiting on that to happen. There was arbitration with two players. So I get from a standpoint where fans aren't feeling great, and then for a reporter who's supposed to be an unbiased journalist comes out with that, it's just another thing you put up on the board. You go, see, all of this has to mean something when they might all be independent of each other.
Reese, real quick, they didn't go to arbitration with either player.
Well, they were close with Jed,
but they actually did not go to arbitration.
I'll just say this. I see no scenario where the Columbus Blue Jackets do not play in Columbus, Ohio. In my life. I just don't. I think the city's too much of a behemoth. I think that the growth that you see here in the city is growth that isn't replicated around the country in big cities. Certainly there are some Sunbelt ones that have exploded and you can't keep up with them. But as northern cities go, this is as healthy a city as you're going to find. And I've been to a lot of them. Certainly a lot of them this summer. There aren't many that are healthier than this one. You're not going to find a fan base healthier. Now, what I don't know is I don't know what the McConnell's stomach is for continuing to operate this. I don't know that because we don't hear from them very often. But I do believe that if the Columbus Blue Jackets were ever to be made available, there would be people willing to buy them and keep them here and profit greatly off of that. Because it's just too damn good of a market. And despite them not winning really at all consistently in 25 plus years, the fan base is there. The corporate dollars are here. It's in a way, it's a bit of a sleeping giant rather than some sort of spot of desperation would be my read on it. So been here 20 years. I just don't see a scenario where the Columbus Blue Jackets are not playing in Columbus. I don't buy that. I suppose people said that about the Seattle Supersonics. I suppose they said it about the Browns. I suppose they're saying it about the Blazers now, but I just think the city's in a really sweet spot. It'd be silly to go anywhere. We'll go around the sports world last night, get you updated on what I saw yesterday at Browns camp with the quarterbacks as well. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
You know Buckeye football. These two say, hold my beer. The Beat with Austin and Berm.
Sponsored by the Waterworks.
Daily on the Fan's YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Cosby Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Ohio State fans, your first look at the 2026 Buckeyes is here. Join us Thursday through Saturday, the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, Ohio State Football Training Camp, presented by Safe Flight and Bob's Discount Furniture. The fans' live training camp broadcast begin Thursday morning, 6 a.m., T-Bone and Tyvus, Morning Juice. We will be there 9 to noon, and then on Saturday, the Fan Sports Saturday from 10 to 1. Reese will be there keeping a close eye on everything. If you want to go, you can. You can secure your spot today at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Don't miss your chance to be part of Buckeye Nation's kickoff to 2026. Gates open at 8 tomorrow. Practice kicking off at 9 tomorrow. Bootsy and Beamsy will be running around there as well. So we'll keep an eye on them from a distance, and we'll do a little program and see the Buckeyes.
It's worth the price of admission right there.
Could be. Could very well be. All right. Let's do the thing where I'm a Browns beat reporter and you guys ask questions. Go.
Did the fans really boo Deshaun Watson yesterday at Browns camp?
I didn't hear it. If they did, I didn't hear it. Yesterday was a Shadur day with the ones. Deshaun was with the twos. Dylan Gabriel did get some one reps in one situational thing where he was with the number one offensive line. And I think Harold Fannin was in there, but it was maybe Cedric Tillman and Wallace at receiver. But I did not hear them boo Deshaun Watson. Watson didn't make any massive mistakes, you know, down. He didn't turn the ball over. I don't remember him throwing an interception or missing anybody wildly. If there is a criticism of quarterbacks who are not Shadur Sanders, and that would be Dylan and Deshaun, it would be perhaps that they are not as willing to drive the ball down the field as Shadur is. Shadur is willing to throw the ball down the field. The other two are really pretty checkdowny.
Did Shadur do a better job of getting the offense lined up and out of the huddle?
Yeah. I mean, it's still, he did have another one though yesterday where they're, you know, in a situation where, I mean, everything they do is game situation. So you've got the play clock running and they're late getting out of the huddle and he audibles with like 7 seconds on the play clock and it runs down to zero because you can't get the play changed that quickly. And Monk was pretty frustrated about that, but there has been consistent procedure issues more for Shadur than Deshaun, but Deshaun has had a couple as well. But just offensively in general, there has been a lot of procedural stuff that has happened, which is driving Monk absolutely nuts. I thought Shadur had a pretty good day. He had a really nice ball to Floria down the sideline. He throws a really nice, like, it's kind of like a slot fade. He throws a really nice fade ball to the sideline. Like, he can drop that in a bucket pretty well. There's not much that's happening over the field, over the middle of the field, though. And there's still an install phase. They have today and tomorrow for install, and then they'll get into, you know, now, then you're really practicing by the time you get to Friday. So today will be a Deshaun day up there after yesterday was a Shadur day.
Does this speak to utilizing more Quinshon Judkins this season? How does he look?
Oh, he looks great. He looks absolutely spectacular. I mean, his burst is incredible. And this is the other thing that makes this whole thing a little bit difficult is because right now the number two receivers, although yesterday they did work Denzel Boston in with the ones a little bit, and Casey Concepcion was out yesterday just out of precaution. But when they have Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston running against the two corners, it's just not fair. So they get kind of whatever they want. You could throw to Denzel Boston against number two corners every single time, and he would catch it every time. So they have legitimate weaponry now on the outside. Boston looks like T. Higgins. So if you're looking for a doppelganger for him, he looks like T. Higgins is what I would say he is. And then Casey Concepcion's a little bit of Zay Flowers. Like he's just a jitterbug, man, just gets upfield really quickly. So they have legitimate weapons there. And then Judy and Bond look nice too. So like they have something they didn't have last year from a weaponry standpoint. They just, you know, it's just going to be whatever happens at quarterback.
So that kind of led me to my next question. How long do we have to wait until Denzel Boston is running with the number ones?
So he was yesterday some. So it's happening. They're just in install two bake. Like, so they're just kind of installing situational stuff. And so they really haven't been like, here's our ones, let's go. I think if you're looking for a timeline on the quarterback thing and for a lot of these things, get through install on Thursday, then that'll start to happen. My hunch is Todd Monken will let Shadur or Deshaun start one preseason game, the other one start the other preseason game. But then as I've said all along, the one you really pay attention to is that Thursday joint practice with Buffalo. Whoever gets the majority of the one reps there, that would lead me to believe that that's the one who's going to start, you know, kind of the opener. One other thing, just procedurally, Carson Swessinger's been out really now three practices in a row. That's out of an abundance of caution. Nothing to see there. But also, they had three defensive tackles out yesterday. So Mike Hall has been out now since Saturday. Mason Graham was out yesterday as well, last year's first-round pick. And then Malik Collins has been out all of camp. So, and their three of their four best defensive tackles were all out, and the defense is still kind of having their way a little bit. So that's kind of where you are on all of that. We'll see.
Did any good dogs get adopted?
It's the coolest thing, man.
They do a good job with that.
It's such a cool thing. And you've seen it. I know, Reese, like, yeah, it's such a cool thing that they do, that they have, you know, the puppy adoptions, and they've got them there and they're ready. I just think it's awesome. I'm really proud of the organization for how they do that, because you see, I mean, on a daily basis, you see handfuls of them leaving and being adopted. It's just a really cool job that they do of on that side of things. So that was very, very cool to see. I'm going to a baseball game tonight. It's happening. I'm going to the Guardians and the Mets. Two buddies in town, so I'm gonna go up and go to that. I haven't been to a baseball game in years. I think the last baseball game I was at was the All-Star Home Run Derby up in Cleveland with Vlad Guerrero, and I think the big panda guy won it. Pete Alonso.
Polar bear.
Was that like 6 years ago? It's been a minute.
Pete
Alonso won it, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was the polar bear.
Polar bear.
Sandoval for the Giants was the panda.
Yeah, it was Pete Alonso won it, but Vlad Guerrero kind of won the night I think that was the last time I was at a baseball activity, so it's been a minute. So we'll refresh tonight. We'll let you know how all of that went, Guardians and Mets tonight up in Cleveland. It is a Hey Guys First Friday. It's still time to get your Hey Guys questions in. We will tackle those coming up next. Second hour of the program, Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State football begins fall camp tomorrow morning. Buckeyes are 1 month out from opening the season, Saturday, September 5th, hosting Ball State. The fans going to be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center for camp coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Football Buckeyes earned 38 first-place votes in the preseason coaches poll. They'll begin the season as the top-ranked team for the first time since 2015. The AP will release their preseason poll next Friday. Back to the coaches poll, Oregon comes in at 2, Georgia's 3rd, Texas is 4th. Followed by Notre Dame and Indiana, Ohio State will play 6 teams in the top 25, starting with the game at Texas Week 2. In the NFL tomorrow night, the Cardinals battle the Panthers in the Hall of Fame game. Arizona will start Carson Beck opposite Kenny Pickett for Carolina. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 ultimate Buckeye experiences. We're talking tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
I get to your Hey Guys questions in just a second. I missed this last night. Jameer Brown, the 5-star wide receiver, he's committed to Ohio State, was spotted returning to practice at Wayne. So he had transferred to Big Walnut and is now back at Wayne. And then I see this from Stephen Wright, who's reporting on all of this. Wayne Athletic Director Joe Augustine confirmed this morning Jameer Brown is enrolled at Wayne again. His eligibility for the season is working itself out. So, interesting stuff there.
This is weird, and I think we have a Hey Guys in this, so I'll wait a little bit to get into this. But
all right, good. But this is there's a lot going on with Ohio high school football eligibility right now. The NIL stuff, and there's a lot of layers to it. Time for a little Hey Guys on a First Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag Hey Guys and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by Rose Pest Solutions.
So we'll start on Twitter. Jared asks, is the high school transfer system even more wild, wild west than it is in college? He says this after the Jameer Brown news. He's only at Big Walnut for about 7 months for the track season. Again, now back at Wayne. You heard the reporting that Bo just mentioned from the Dayton Daily News saying that, yes, Wayne's AD says that they're working things out, but he is working with his old high school team.
I'm going to lean on Bake heavily on this. I have a high school freshman. Several kids in his class, in his grade, were recruited to play various sports at other places on the private school side of things, and so their grade has kind of been ravaged a little bit with that. So I don't really know how all of this works. I don't know how you can transfer from public school to public school. My hunch is you have to move to the town if you go public to public. My understanding is if you go public to private as a freshman, you can go right away, but then if you come back, you can go private back to public and not have to miss. But if you go public to private, you have to sit, is my understanding of it, once you start high school. We had a kid in town here who started out the season public, middle of the football season, went private, and was ineligible to finish the season in football. So I don't really know. That's my understanding of it. I know, obviously, in Central Ohio, we don't have as big of an issue with the public-private thing as it is in Northeast Ohio and as it is down in Cincinnati. But I think it's a pretty big deal right now. It's probably always been a pretty big deal in this state. We've had that for a long time, where talented players move to places that are really good at football. We've had this happen before, but it does feel like it's exacerbated a little bit with this now that we have NIL in high school.
I don't think it's more wild, wild west than college, because there are still some rules that do get followed, and there's a lot of kids that do miss the end of their season in high school football because of transfer rules. You can play the first five, but then you can't play the last five in the postseason. So I don't think it's as wild, wild west, but there are parts of it that need some clarification. Now, with this Jameer Brown thing, what I think is interesting is he's already been to Big Walnut and won a state title in track with Big Walnut, maybe two state titles. But whatever exemption he was on for transferring to Big Walnut, like he was going to have to apply for it again this fall. So I don't know all the details with that. And I don't know if there was something with that where maybe that was going to be in jeopardy. Or if maybe he just wanted to play the senior year with everybody he's always played. Maybe he came here because he wanted to be closer to Ohio State. Maybe Ohio State wanted him to move to town to be closer. If you remember, Sam Williams-Dixon did that a couple years ago with Pickerington North. He was a kid that was from West Holmes up in Amish country, near Amish country. And he played his final 2 years at Pickerington North after committing to Ohio State. So I don't know what it is with Jameer. It could just simply be this kid got close to football season, was like, I want to finish with all the guys I've played with my whole life. And
who
he wanted
knows?
To go back to Wayne.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is, what's his eligibility going to be for the end of the season now with Huber Heights Wayne?
I don't understand how he could be eligible, Bake, if he played last year at Big Walnut, unless he's going to have records that show that he physically moved to Big Walnut and then physically moved back to Wayne. I don't understand how you could possibly have eligibility otherwise.
Yeah, so that's all going to be interesting to figure out.
It's one of those things where you just wonder, will there be lawyers?
Yeah, there will be.
I will say this, though. Big Walnut has made it to the state semifinals the past couple of seasons, and they've got a third-year running back and a quarterback that's going to Michigan State. They were in a low, like, there was a lot of teams that moved up to Division I this year to miss that Division II Region 7 that had Big Walnut, that has Massillon, that has Waterson now because they got bumped up to Division II. Yeah. So there were teams, there's a lot of teams playing Division I football that aren't supposed to this year because they're trying to avoid that. So that's a big blow for Big Walnut.
Our school's one of them. We went up to Division I for that exact same reason, because you also have in that, you also have not only the teams you mentioned, you also have Hoban and Walsh.
They're in Region 6.
No, I know, but they're Division 2, and like all that Division 2 is nuts.
Anderson, Avon, who have played for the state title against
each
other
the past
2 years.
Avon's won the last two. So yeah, that Division 2 is crazy. Yeah.
We'll go to the YouTube chat for this next Hey Guys. Chris asks, with the threat of school season in the fall right around the corner, what summertime activity are you going to miss the most when it's negative 4 degrees?
All of them. the things that make me the happiest on the weekend is if we can get a family game of 2-on-2. So if it's me and Bootsy versus the two bigs, like we do a series. And Bootsy and I have crushed them this summer. They've stood no chance. And then I love nothing more than like going to dinner and then going out and getting a quick 9 in at like 7:30 as the sun is going. I love that. I just think that's the most relaxing thing I can. So I will miss that stuff tremendously when it's February. Tremendously.
The two things that came to mind for me, and I don't do either of them as much as I would like, but the pool and golf. Those would be the two things. I think, because you guys know my disdain for hot. So if I'm going to be outside, I'd like to be in the pool.
Yeah.
In water, where I'm not as hot.
I realized this just the other day, actually, that when I want to take Odie around the block just for 5-10 minutes, right now all I've got to do is put on my Crocs or my Birkenstocks, and I clip the leash on him, and I'm out. Yeah. In the winter, when it's 4 degrees... you've got to get pants on, a coat on, depending on how much snow's on the ground, you're putting your boots on, then you're getting socks on. Like, it's a whole 10-15 minute process compared to the summer where it's just slip them on, get them out.
Those like February, January days, Reese, where it's like the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour and it's like the sun is not quite up and it's dark and you look down. I look down at Buddy Garrity and he's like, really, Dad? We're really going to do this? And I'm like, yeah, dude, we got to do it. We got
to
do it,
this
man.
This has to happen. You're getting suited up for battle.
He's dropping his deuce in 2 feet of snow, and you can't even see where it lands. Like, yeah, I don't miss that.
Phil asks in the YouTube chat, hey, guys, did you and your classmates ever pull a senior prank? He says, we tried to saran wrap the billboards leading back to the teacher's parking lot at like 4 o'clock to prevent them from getting into the lot. So he finished at 5 o'clock. Janitor shows up and ripped it all down.
Oh. We have a senior prank. I don't think that we did. I don't remember one. Nothing that comes to mind. I'm sure there were hijinks, but nothing that I can think of specifically that jumps out that we actually landed.
Yeah, I can't speak for my classmates. I don't think I was involved in any senior prank. I will say right after we graduated, there was a bunch of us that took a couple coolers out to the football field. Like, we didn't do any damage or mess anything up, but we just thought it would be cool to hang out there with a couple coolers and have some pops on the football field. So we did do that until somebody shined a big flashlight in there, and then we all took off. But
so dazed and confused. You did dazed and confused. You did Wooderson's running routes with car keys.
Causing no damage at all, just sitting there hanging out.
Having a few pops.
Kyle asks in the YouTube chat, "Hey guys, the wife and I are switching it up tonight, looking for a good mocktail." He asks for recommendations.
For a mocktail? Well, that the beer that we used to do, that Go Brewing, they did a good job with that. If you're there's a lot of good NA beers out there. Mocktail. I mean, I guess so. Basically, what you're looking for is a pop, right? A flavored sparkling water. Is that what we're looking for? Kind of a thing. Liquid Death makes a bunch of good pop without much, if any, sugar in it. That's got a bunch of different flavors. Those are kind of winners.
My they just had their Dr. Pepper flavor.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Oh, the kids, that's all I have because it has no dye. So it's that is our substitute for pop is that because it has no dye in it. So that if they spill it, it's not a disaster. But
did I see this week at the store that Liquid Death has like a chocolate peanut butter drink
it's
now?
It's in play. It's probably in play. They have about it. They have a, I mean, this is like an ad for them, but I guess my niece works for them, so that's fine. They have a Pop-Tarts iced tea that is stunningly good. Just stunningly good. And I'm a big peach iced tea guy, but their Pop-Tarts iced tea one is nuts.
Yeah, I'm seeing they teamed up with Mr. Beast, the YouTube guy, for Feastables Liquid Death Peanut Butter Cup.
Yeah, I imagine it hits. Most of their flavors do, and they have one, I think, in every flavor you'd want.
What was the, was it O'Doul's? Was that the first NA beer got popular?
It was O'Doul's. Yeah, that was the first one to do it. So, yeah. It's funny. I'm reminded of the Billy Bob line in Landman where he orders the Mick Ultra and the guy goes, you know, there's alcohol in that. He goes, look, do me a favor. Watch me drink 6 or 7 of these blankety blanks and then tomorrow I'll come back and serve me 6 or 7 whiskeys and you tell me if there's a difference, bud. So that's such a great line. Anytime you do any of that. All right, good job on the Hey Guys today. Just one segment of it because of 20 Most Interesting. So coming up next, we hit you with a little higher, lower. We have a coach's preseason top 25 poll to digest. We will do so coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Do you feel that? The season is getting closer. Buckeye football comes your way in 31 days. Every game. Every season. Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan. Ohio sports destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking at sunny to partly cloudy skies here for today with highs into the upper 80s this afternoon. Also tracking the chance for a few showers and storms mainly in the afternoon east of Interstate 71. We'll see more of the same here for your Thursday with highs into the upper 80s and some sunshine around. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The friends are the guests and listeners. Reeser and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly and always sponsored by great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades. Time for a little higher or lower. Hit it, Reese.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
Oh, baby.
Just because they took 2 of the top 5 spots in the AP, or the coaches' poll, I should say. Coaches' poll had their preseason top 25 out yesterday at noon. And receiving 38 first-place votes, the Ohio State Buckeyes, OSU is the top team in the coaches' preseason top 25 for the first time since 2015. At number 2, Oregon with 6 first-place votes. At three, Georgia with seven first-place votes. Texas got a pair of first-place votes. The Longhorns, who will host Ohio State Week 2, come in at number four. Higher or lower for Texas at four?
So I think Ohio State can end up number one. Let's start there. I think they can end up number one. But I also think it's reasonable for them to have not started number one based on the questions that they have defensively. So I think it would have been very reasonable for Oregon to be number one. I think it would have been very reasonable for Georgia to be number one. You could even do the Indiana thing if you wanted to. So I think it's well, I love to see the Buckeyes number one, obviously, and I think that they very likely could end up being the number one team in the country. I also think there are some teams that have fewer questions returning than the Buckeyes. So I would say maybe a little lower for Ohio State, no lower than third, fourth, somewhere in there, even second. But to me, it feels like there are other teams that have fewer questions than Ohio State does, and I think Ohio State has some pretty big questions on the defensive side of the ball. So let's get that out of the way right away. I would probably have Texas a little lower than this. I would probably have Texas somewhere like seven, five, six, seven, something like that. I think there is a lot of smoke that's blown their way based on the way that they finished. And if you just look at the way that they're finished, there's not a win. And I know they got Cam Coleman. They proved themselves in the portal. Year two of Arch, fully starting, all of it. I get all of it. But to me, they have big questions to answer. And I don't think they answered them in the last six games of the season. I think they beat up on some pretty poor teams along the way and kind of inflated how good they are. So I would have Texas below Notre Dame. I'd probably have them below Indiana. I'd probably have them right there with Miami, somewhere in there. So I'd probably have the Horns to start the year.
So, Bo, I couldn't agree with you more about Ohio State. At the end of the season, they very well might end up being the best team in college football. But, man, you're losing Caleb Downs and Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese. And, goodness, it looks like Sonny Styles is going to be the star of that Washington Commanders defense already. So I would have Oregon number one. I would have Georgia number two. I would have Ohio State three. I have Texas number six in mine. And I almost put them seven behind Ole Miss, but I have Notre Dame, I have Indiana, and then I have Texas. So, yeah, I think, man, for all of the, well, what if our only losses were to Florida and Georgia? Well, you almost lost to Kentucky. You almost lost to Mississippi State, too. You probably should have lost those games. So I think Kentucky has a, or I think, geez, I think Texas has a lot of questions around them. I have them at six, but I could even see them lower.
Yeah, me too. So you and I see him similarly, yeah.
This is from the coaches' preseason top 25 poll. The Associated Press will unveil their preseason top 25 next Friday at noon. That'll be August 17th. At five on this list, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who received five first-place votes. Indiana got 14 first-place votes. So if you're keeping track, that's the second most first-place votes. Hoosiers come in at six. The Miami Hurricanes at seven. Texas A&M comes in at eight. Higher or lower for the Aggies there?
So I would have Texas A&M, and we've talked about all of these teams on 20 Most Interesting. So I would have Texas A&M. I just don't believe in the quarterback the way that I believe in a healthy Johnny Mateer or the way that I believe in a healthy Trinidad Chambliss. So I would take A&M back a little bit, at least a couple of spots. I actually think I'm higher on LSU, I know, than you guys are. I think Lane will work a little magic right away with them. So I would have A&M down at least a couple spots, maybe like 10, 11, somewhere in there. I think it's a little too rich for me on the A&M blood this year for the Aggies.
Exact same for me. I would have them lower. I have Ole Miss higher than them. I have Oklahoma higher than them. I have Bama higher than them. I'm higher on Bama than I think most people. And I have Texas Tech higher than them, too. I think that Texas Tech defense is really, really good. And I'm not so sure. I know he's coming off an injury, but I'm not so sure how much of a drop-off it is from Brennan Sorsby to Will Hammond. I think Will Hammond's a pretty good quarterback. So just depending on his health at the beginning of the season. So yeah. I would have Texas A&M lower.
Rounding out the top 10 in the coaches' preseason poll, you've got Oklahoma 9, Ole Miss 10, Alabama's at 11, Texas Tech in at 12, LSU 13, USC 14, BYU 15, Michigan at 16. Higher or lower for the Wolverines at 16?
lower for Michigan, higher for SC. I know I'm higher on SC than Bake is, but I think SC could have a really, really nice season there. So I'd have SC more around somewhere between 9 and 12, somewhere in that neck of the woods. I think it's too high for Michigan. We did Michigan on Monday, 20 most interesting. They are loaded at running back. They're pretty good defensively, but this is a brand new day for them. And to me, it feels like they are a little bit inflated here in terms of year one with Whittingham. I would probably drop them down a little bit. I think the familiarity with, for example, the team we're going to do today on 20 Most Interesting with their coach, a lot of Iowa State guys came with Matt Campbell to Happy Valley. I think Penn State, I would have them. I like their chances this year a little bit more than Michigan. I'm not sure I don't like Washington's chances a little bit more than Michigan with Demond Williams coming back and even the beloved Ponies who are down on this a little bit. I'd probably have Michigan somewhere. I mean, they got Iowa around 22. I would have Michigan somewhere in there.
Maybe I'm giving Kyle Whittingham too much credit, but I feel like what Michigan does have this year suits how Kyle Whittingham wants to play football with that running game, those two running backs, that offensive line coming back, and a quarterback that is very adept at running the football too. So I think I've got Michigan at 17 in mind, so just a one spot lower. For the Wolverines.
The coaches see it a little differently. They've got Penn State at 17, Tennessee 18, Washington 19, SMU at 20. Higher or lower for the Ponies there?
Well, beloved Ponies to the moon. I think they ought to be more like 12, honestly, with everybody that they have coming back. I think it's a little bit of disrespect for the beloved Ponies. I don't understand Tennessee at all at 18. I don't get that in any way, shape, or form, how Tennessee's 18th on this thing. I wouldn't probably rank them. So I would get them the heck out of there. Beloved Ponies need to go up into the high, low teens at worst. They need to be somewhere around 13, 14, somewhere like that.
So I think when I did mine, I had SMU at 5. So I have them 5, or not 5, high. Not 5, sorry, 15. I have them 5 15. Spots higher.
So who 15. Loves them more than me, Bank? Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah, I have them at 15. I don't get Tennessee either. Penn State at 17 is interesting because with the schedule that they play, maybe they end up 17th, but there's no way in hell they're the 17th best team in the country to me.
They may end up 10th with that schedule. I mean, it feels like they're going to go 10-2. So, I mean, they're going to be in the middle of this thing for sure, even whatever you think of their roster. I'm looking forward to talking to Rich about that. We'll do so in about an hour in terms of what he thinks about the talent level that's there.
Rounding out the coaches' preseason top 25, Utah 21, Iowa 22, Clemson 23, Houston 24, Missouri 25. Can't go any lower because it's the top 25, but higher or lower for the Missouri Tigers?
Who's quarterbacking Missouri? Is this Austin Simmons?
Yes, Austin Simmons is there.
Formerly of Ole Miss, who started the year last year as the quarterback at Ole Miss. Okay, so Austin Simmons is there. I think that in regard to Utah and Clemson, they just were like, well, these teams are always ranked. Let's rank them. Because I'll wait on why anyone would rank Clemson in the top 25 of anything. I'm never ranking
Clemson again. That's for damn sure.
Off the pool forever.
You went to bat for them. I can't speak to the Missouri part of it. We haven't looked into them as much. This is usually about where they are, but I think Utah and Clemson, for example, have no business being ranked.
This is what I will say about Missouri is I think this is probably pretty appropriate just because I think Eli Drinkwitz is a good coach.
Yeah.
And he will always have them in the top 25 of the country. So I think this is good for them. He can coach some ball.
Yes, he can. Yes, he absolutely can. Jake Trotter can talk some ball, and he'll do so with us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Let me introduce you to a man with a magnificent salt and pepper beard. A man who's currently roasting lamb on a spit. A man who runs the Rocky River Greek Festival. That man is Jake Trotter.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
And a man who we may see in person down here tomorrow. Are the Ravens correct on this? That you could be making an appearance, buddy?
I'll be down there tomorrow for day one.
ready to go. The number one team in the country. What did you make of that with the coaches poll having the Buckeyes atop the poll?
Kind of a lot of deference to Ohio State.
Yeah.
I could definitely make the case Ohio State should be preseason number one. But there are some question marks with this team, you know, especially defensively. You know, they lost three top 11 guys in the NFL draft and several other starters they've got to replace. Now, I think there's a lot to like on the defense. You know, I think the linebackers have a chance to be really good. You know, we'll see what happens along the defensive line and in the secondary. But, yeah, I mean, considering the way last season ended for them, it's just a lot of respect for Ryan Day and the program they have and kind of the infrastructure that's in place where they're just kind of automatically preseason top five no matter what.
It's a remarkable thing. This is the second time since 2015, first time since 15 that Ohio State started the coaches poll preseason number one. They did it in 15 as well. It's the during that stretch, buddy, the lowest they've ever been ranked in the preseason is six. That's the lowest. So they're always two, three. They're always somewhere in there. We're doing this series called 20 Most Interesting Programs. We're in the last week of it. We're rounding out with the Big Ten teams. And so we went through all of the teams. We're interesting contenders, so forth and so on. Buddy, I think that what we've had, and we can complain about all the parity and all of it, but you said you could make a case for Ohio State number one. I can make a case they're number one. I could also make a case for about maybe six other teams to be preseason number one, because I think that what we've seen is NIL has created a bit of true parity.
Who would you make the case for?
I think you could do it for Oregon. I think you could do it for Georgia. I think you could do it for Notre Dame. I think you could do it for Indiana. You might be able to do it for Oklahoma. You might be able to do it for Miami. You might be able to do it for Texas
and Ole Miss. Oklahoma, really?
Maybe.
Really? So
maybe.
More than six.
I mean, I think you got... Dude, Indiana was 100-1 last year and won it. It's a new day.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I wonder, like, who that team might be, you know, kind of lurking in the, you know, 15 to 25 range. I mean, you know, Iowa's quarterback situation is so rough right now. I can't put them. I think Michigan is just too big of a question mark, including that quarterback with Underwood. What does USC do for you?
I like USC a lot. I like them a lot. I'm higher on them than my guy Bakes, not quite as high on them, but I'm pretty high on USC. I think that Lincoln, to me, now, did you get a chance to talk to him?
I did, for a little bit.
To me, it felt like he was a little cat ate the canary. Like, this is the first time over there where it felt like maybe he thought he had a team.
Yeah, you know, he is, I don't know if he said this, he always seems to say we're close when he thinks that they're not quite there yet. I don't think he said that. And I just know they have a lot of confidence in the offensive and defensive lines, which, mm-hmm. you know, has been their weakness since joining the Big Ten. And really, frankly, it's been a weakness for Lincoln Riley teams dating back to when he went to Oklahoma. The one question I have, though, you know, to throw some cold water on this optimism, they lose Danton Lynn to Penn State, their defensive coordinator, who mm-hmm. had done a really good job at UCLA and I thought was starting to turn this USC defense around. And they go blast from the past. They go get Gary Patterson, who was the longtime TCU coach, but frankly is really not coached that much in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And so, like, does he still have his fastball? Because that, you know, when Gary was in his heyday, I mean, they had great defenses at TCU with, you know, not necessarily the greatest talent in the world. You know, can he still bring a little bit of that magic? I just don't know. But that is something to watch, where that could be the wild card of whether USC is really a legit contender or not.
Totally could be. Wasn't he a volunteer at Texas at one point after TCU fired him?
Yeah,
didn't he, like,
you know,
help Texas out? Who he hated, right?
Baylor. He was at Baylor, which was like sacrilegious. I mean, it would be like if 20 years from now, Ryan Day went and became a volunteer analyst for Michigan. I mean, it just seems, or it's like if Urban Meyer went to go be an analyst for Kyle Whittingham right now, it just would be so strange. So I don't know what to make of that situation, and that's one of the bigger questions I think in the entire Big Ten, because USC talent wise they've got a chance to be a real factor, but their schedule is also just brutal. I mean, I had the it's on ESPN.com right now, kind of ranking the picking out the toughest schedules, easiest schedules, you know, toughest three game stretch, and et cetera, et cetera. And USC's got, I gave them the toughest home schedule in the country because of, you know, they've got Ohio State, they've got Oregon, they've got Washington, and then on top of that, they got to go to Penn State and Indiana. Mm-hmm. So that schedule could swallow them up too.
Yeah, it absolutely could. Now, the opposite of that is Penn State, which I know you've spent some time over there, and they are, I mean, Matt Campbell brought a lot of that Iowa State influence with him. To me, in terms of new coaches being set up for success right away, I look at him and go, and we're going to talk about them in 20 most interesting in about 23 minutes from now, but I look at them and I go, with this schedule, how does he not go 10-2? And how does he not have incredible program momentum coming out of this?
Yeah, you know, Penn State, what were they, like 16, 17 on the coaches poll?
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty high for them, because they're such a question mark. I mean, I think even they are kind of curious to see what this looks like, because they have so many new pieces. And, you know, half the starting lineup is going to be Iowa State, former Iowa State players. So what does that look like? But, yeah, like they play, I think they play like a series of MAC schools, and then they've got Wisconsin at home. They go to Northwestern. I think that, is that the...
Here it is, buddy.
That new stadium.
Yeah, it's, they go Marshall. Marshall at home, at Temple, Buffalo at home, then Wisconsin at home, at Northwestern, USC at home, at Michigan. Yeah, Purdue at home, at Washington, and then it's Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland in November.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of Wisconsin. I mean, they've got the new quarterback Colton Joseph, but they've been so bad offensively for the last few years. I mean, Northwestern is going to be pretty feisty. You know, they've been kind of a 7-8 win team under Braun the last couple of years here. But let's just assume they beat Wisconsin, Northwestern. You're 5-0. You know, if you can somehow beat USC at home, that does two things. First of all, it eliminates the curse of inability to beat top 10 teams that, you know, plague obviously James Franklin. And then on top of that, you're 6-0 with a marquee win, and you've got a pretty manageable schedule the rest of the way. I mean, listen to this, you know, at Michigan, it's going to be tough, but then Purdue at home, at Washington, you know, winnable, tough, but winnable. Minnesota at home, I think Minnesota's going to be pretty feisty this year, but, you know, very winnable at home. Rutgers at Maryland. Yeah, if they can escape Northwestern and then beat USC, this Matt Campbell era is going to be off and running. I mean, they could be a stealthy playoff team.
Was there a team, you were over in Chicago then, I take it? Or did you talk to Lincoln on the phone? Okay. Was there a team that maybe felt like they were better than people think they are over there?
I think it might be might be Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think Minnesota has got a chance to be pretty good. They've got the defensive superstar in Anthony Smith. You know, their young quarterback who I think he set like a record for wins by a freshman quarterback last year. You know, they lost a little bit to, you know, the portal. They lost their outstanding safety to Oregon, Coy. Mm-hmm. Drake Lindsey's his quarterback's name, by the way, but they've been a pretty consistent program. Like, it doesn't feel like it, but if you go look at Minnesota under PJ Fleck, it's like 8-9, 8-7, 8-9. I mean, they have won a decent amount of games, and I think the combination with Lindsey and then Anthony Smith, coming back, you know, 12 plus sacks last season. You know, they've got a chance to I think be a pretty good team. I don't know their schedule. Okay, let me call it their schedule here. Like, they have a super manageable non-conference. Mississippi State at home, that's winnable. They go to Washington. All right. Michigan at home, huge game for them. At Purdue, Iowa at home, big game. you know, let's say they lose maybe at Indiana, but and you got UCLA, Penn State, Northwestern, Wisconsin. I mean, that could be an 8-9, who knows, maybe 10-win team.
To your point, too, eight starters back on offense, seven back on defense for Minnesota. So a lot of experience, including, as you mentioned, Anthony Smith at the defensive end and then Drake Lindsey at quarterback. So, yeah, that's
– Yes.
It's. I think – I'll get you out of here on this one, and I know you haven't been covering the league quite as long as I have. But to me, buddy, this is the most interesting and best the Big Ten has ever been.
Well, it's definitely got two things. It is – legit top heavy. I mean, you know, you were talking about I could make the case for X, Y, and Z number one. I mean, you could definitely make the case Ohio State and Oregon, and they were 1 and 2 in the coaches bowl. Mm-hmm. I think Indiana is a legit national championship contender again. Mm-hmm. You know, quarterback is a question mark, but you know, I remember all my Big 12 friends said, you know, Will Howard's terrible. Like, I can't believe Ohio State's doing that. And got a 99 QBR in the playoff, like won the national championship. So I tell them now when they say basically the same thing about Hoover, you guys lost your credibility when you were saying all that about Will Howard. USC and I think, you know, Michigan, Penn State, Iowa, Minnesota, you know, Washington, like, you know, what did I just name 8-9 teams?
It's half the league.
There's still some rough spots at the bottom of the conference, but yeah, I think you've got four, maybe five legit playoff contenders, and you've got some real bulk in the middle with teams like Minnesota and Iowa.
Yeah, I agree. Going to be fun. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow, buddy.
Yeah, see you tomorrow, Bo. It's here.
All right, there we go. Jake Trotter, ESPN senior college football reporter, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Play this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Greg Fry and the Buckeyes are at Iowa in that 1990 thriller.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan. The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Cosby Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Reeser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a first Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So we got encouraging news Monday that USC will renew their football rivalry with Notre Dame in 2030. Reporting on Tuesday says the Trojans nixed plans for a two-game football series against Texas Tech in 27 and 28. On3 says the pair of games, Houston in 27, Las Vegas in 28, would have given the Red Raiders a non-conference opponent in those seasons after losing their home-and-home with NC State. I also learned yesterday Lincoln Riley's a Lubbock native. He played quarterback for the Red Raiders and Texas Tech's where he began his coaching career. Thing or not a thing?
Yeah, I knew that last part. This is a little bit of the thing that's really frustrating about the sport. So my guess is USC probably views themselves as a cut above Texas Tech and would view that as playing a two-game series against Texas Tech as slumming for them. That's my guess. And this has been happening in this sport for the longest time. Like, the haves rarely play the have-nots. The haves rarely play the sort of haves. The most famous story of this is in the 80s when Bobby Bowden was building Florida State, and he couldn't get anybody to play in Tallahassee, so he just played on the road. He had a stretch in one of the early 80s when he played here, he played LSU, he played Pitt when they were at the peak of their powers, all on the road in order just to play those teams because he didn't care about getting home and away. And I think they went 3-2 in that stretch, but it validated them. And so this sucks. It sucks because, quite honestly, Texas Tech's been better than USC in the NIL world and free transfer world of college football. And it's hard to believe that Texas Tech's going anywhere. So it stinks that these games aren't being played. My guess is the reason I just laid out is the reason why.
So I wonder if USC just is going the Indiana model. The Notre Dame thing, though, has been a rival for so long that fan backlash got them to go back to it. Plus, I'm sure they get paid pretty handsomely for those Notre Dame games. Now, obviously, one of them is probably in their Big Ten schedule, but the other one outside of that, I would guess they get some money for playing them. So I wonder if USC is just like, yeah, we don't need to play anybody. The Notre Dame thing is just, gosh, our fans are so upset, we've got to appease them.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at their schedules, and obviously this stuff could change. For 27, UNLV and Nevada now. And then non-conference, the only one they have scheduled in 28 is Fresno State.
Ew.
Yeah.
Despite rampant online speculation about a reunion between the Sixers and Ben Simmons, Brett Siegel of Clutch Points posted the 76ers cannot currently sign Simmons to a minimum deal as they're just $1.8 million below the first apron hard cap. If they wanted Simmons back, Philadelphia would need to free up some extra room, and Siegel says there's currently no talk of the Sixers getting rid of anyone on their current roster. The 30-year-old Simmons and former first overall pick went unsigned during the 25-26 NBA season. Thing or not a thing?
Well, this is the epitome of not a thing. The only thing that this will allow for me to do is to say and to ask kind of sort of Ron Burgundy-ish, didn't he become like an extreme sport fisherman or something?
Yeah, he bought stake in a fishing team, a professional sports fishing team, and they won a championship. I think he called it a marlin, a big marlin.
Jeez. So he went to the highest bidder at LSU and played the 1 year at LSU and then was the number one overall pick, and then he couldn't shoot. But he was actually decent. In the beginning, I want to say he made a couple of all-star teams. I could be wrong, but this wasn't like a Markelle Fultz situation where he totally forgot how to shoot. By the way, both those guys drafted by the Sixers. Trust the process, right? But his, I think he made a couple of all-star games and then it all fell apart.
Three of them.
Okay, yeah. So he was actually good. He just wasn't, he just couldn't, was it, they couldn't shoot free throws or what was his deal?
I don't think he could shoot, period.
But it wasn't like Fultz where he like forgot how to shoot. Like Ben Simmons never could shoot, right?
Yeah. This is not a thing to me because, one, he's been out of the league for a year. Like, that's usually hard for guys to come back and be productive. Two, he seems very redundant with LeBron James and Jaylen Brown and Edgecombe and Maxey. Like, what makes far more sense is the reporting that they're trying to work out a deal for the veteran minimum for Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Kevin Love is something a little different there and will give them some shooting that all of these guys drive the lane can kick out to. Ben Simmons just seems like the same guy, just not as good.
Yeah.
Akron Athletics is doing something interesting. The Zips have announced a new fan promotion, Offensive Coordinator of the Game, giving one football season ticket holder the first ever opportunity to help script the opening drive of their home opener. This is from the university. Quote, the selected fan will work directly with Zips football head coach Joe Moorhead to help design the plays that open the game, a first-of-its-kind experience for the Akron program. Dr. Andrew Goodrich, the director of athletics, says, quote, we're always looking for new ways to bring our fans closer to the program. This is about giving one of our most loyal supporters a seat at the table right alongside our coaching staff on the biggest night of the season, end quote. Moorhead says he's looking forward to collaborating with the season ticket holder who wins the contest. Thing or not a thing?
My God. Look, it'd be easy to make fun of this, but the reality is that if you're Akron, you're just trying to scratch nickels together and make sense. They're just trying to stay afloat. I don't know how the I think the athletic department's in a tough spot. I think the school's in a tough spot. Here are their records since 2010. 1-11, 1-11, 1-11, 5-7, 5-7, 8-5, 5-7, 7-7, 4-8, 0-12, 1-5, 2-10, 2-10, 2-10, 4-8, 5-7. I mean,
maybe if a fan called the plays, they'd be
holy
better.
Holy smokes, is that a lot of losing? That's a lot of losing. I mean, Terry Bowden was there for a stretch. Joe Moorhead's now there. Remember, he was a big deal hire at Mississippi State. Like, that's a tough job, man.
So that's what I was going to say. There's a couple things here. One, I believe Akron had a couple good seasons with Terry Bowden.
He went 8-5 and 7-7 with Terry.
Yeah. Looked like maybe they could have something, and then wasn't Joe Moorhead at one time like the hottest head coaching of them in college football? Was it? He's the offensive coordinator at Penn State at the time.
He was the offensive coordinator at Penn State. He got the Mississippi State job and did not last 10 minutes there. And then ended up back here, back in Akron, where it's been 2-10, 4-8, 5-7.
I think this tells you how dire it is up at the University of Akron right now. And also, I'm sure this is very misleading. I'm sure there's going to be a handful of plays that one can pick from and just say, hey, let's do this one now. Let's do this one here. I don't think they're actually going to be really offensive coordinating.
No, I'm sure not. I'm sure not. Final hour on a first Friday, 20 most interesting, the Penn State Nittany Lions. We will dig in with our buddy Rich Scarsella at 11:30 and get you set for the Nittanies and a brand new day coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here. On
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. For the first time since 2015, the Buckeyes are number one in the preseason coaches poll. Ohio State received 38 of 72 first-place votes. Indiana got 14 first-place votes, but are sixth to start the season. The Hoosiers are behind number two Oregon, number three Georgia, number four Texas, and fifth-ranked Notre Dame. Buckeyes will play at Texas September 12th. Ohio State opens fall camp tomorrow morning. The fans going to be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center for camp coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The AP will unveil their preseason top 25 next Friday at noon. In other news, the Dayton Daily News is reporting five-star Ohio State commit Jameer Brown is practicing with Huber Heights Wayne in Dayton. Brown transferred to Big Walnut back in January. Wayne's athletic director confirmed his participation with no official word on his eligibility for the 2026 high school football season that begins in 2 weeks. This update is sponsored by Ramos Roofing. Request your free roof or exterior assessment today at RamosRoofingOhio.com. Ramos Roofing, reliable, local, built right.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, just a couple left on 20 most interesting. Pretty sure this team's been on 20 most interesting every year that we have done it. In most instances, this is a program that I think should aspire to more than what it does. We will see if with the regime change that changes. 20 most interesting, the Penn State Nittany Lions.
We'll expand conferences, we'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
And it is a brand new day in Happy Valley. Matt Campbell is in, James Franklin is out. If you're looking for returning starters, look elsewhere. There aren't any. Just two on offense, tackle and a tight end, just two on defense. Now, they did keep Tony Rojas, who's one of their best players at linebacker. So a total of four returning starters. Transfers in, yeah, a lot of them. Basically, this is Iowa State East. The entire team essentially comes over. 22 transfers from Iowa State alone, including quarterback Rocco Becht. He comes back from Iowa State. So from a familiarity standpoint, this is going to feel very familiar to this roster, which is maybe why I'm a little high on them in terms of their ability to take advantage of this absolutely soft schedule that they have. They did lose a ton of transfers. Obviously, they did virtually nothing in recruiting because it took so damn long to hire Matt Campbell. The transfer class ranking was very good. It was fourth, 65th in recruiting for a combined ranking of 34. To me, they are set up for Matt Campbell to have success right away and maybe build on it. Now, can Matt Campbell recruit at a place like Penn State? I have no idea. James Franklin could. James Franklin could recruit. He got five stars. He beat Ohio State on some guys. Not often, but he did. He did watch some of the best players in his area have to drive through the state of Pennsylvania to get to Columbus, and I'm sure that was pretty bitter. There's a couple of ways you can think about this. Campbell entering his first season, Ohio native, Mount Union guy from Stark County. He was 107-70 in his career, a 35-15 run at Toledo, and then a 72-55 run at Iowa State, where he was a second-class citizen in his own state to the Iowa Hawkeyes. So he is in a position now where he is coaching, if not a blue blood, pretty damn close in Penn State, historically, obviously. The beef with James Franklin is he couldn't win the big game. He couldn't beat Ohio State and Michigan, so what James Franklin said is, well, then I don't want to play him anymore. And they did. So you're not on the schedule this year at Penn State. They do play Michigan. The schedule is as easy as it could ever be. There are maybe three or four games where they better watch out, but other than that, they should cruise through most of this schedule. It is an opportunity for Matt Campbell to win right away and then let's see if he can handle a job like this. he had wanted to be interviewed for the Ohio State job. Anytime it had been come open, those wishes were not granted. I think he would have crawled bare-chested from Ames, Iowa to Ann Arbor, Michigan for the Michigan job on several instances. And it almost got to the point where it was like, well, maybe, because he wasn't exactly the hot target anymore. Like, his moment kind of came and went, and he ended up staying at Iowa State, and then this Penn State thing happens. And he wasn't their first choice either. They tried hiring the guy at BYU. They tried hiring a bunch of guys, and then they ended up with Matt Campbell. And so we'll see where all of this goes with him. I am bullish on them from the standpoint of, you bring that many guys with you, you have culture built in right away. Beck's a nice player. Iowa State was a decent program last year. You bring all of those guys in, you're going to have everybody on the same page. They're going to be old. This is an older team. That benefits teams as well. And then I'm bullish because of the schedule, guys. To me, like 9-3 feels worst-case scenario for this team. 8-4 at the worst. But in the year one where you're trying to build momentum, that would probably be a pretty successful season. It would not shock me if they went 10-2 and found themselves in the playoffs. That would not shock me in any way, shape, or form. This is a massive question mark. It just comes down to, do you believe that Matt Campbell can coach at a place like Penn State and have success at a level that James Franklin couldn't?
Yeah.
That's the rub over the next few years.
A disastrous 2025 that when they fired James Franklin, I think that was probably the right time to do something they should have done maybe a year or two earlier. That was what you were like. You were thinking, all right, so Penn State's going to be in pole position to get the coach they want.
Yep.
Kalani Sitake takes the crumble cookie money, stays at Provo. So to your point about Matt Campbell, might have crawled over Lego pieces to get the Michigan job. Not sure he's doing that for Happy Valley, but he's now at Penn State with Rocco Bektus, his guy. So I think that having your quarterback, James Peoples, I think is a tremendous running back. They're going to have a lot of success with, because this schedule, like you said, sets them up perfectly in year one of a brand new coach with a brand new roster and a brand new program for that coach, who I think spent a lot of time at Big Ten Media Days trying to talk to Penn Staters.
I think you're right.
When I hear Matt Campbell talk and when I hear other guys in that program talk, I don't hear we're talking to the country here. They're talking to Penn State. Everybody's trying to get the Penn Staters on board, who are the guys that were around with Joe Paterno, that long for the days of the 90s and the 2000s when Penn State was the talk of college football. And I think it's not this year, and maybe he's not the guy to do it, but right now they're going in the right direction to maybe in year two. I don't know what their booster base is like. I don't think it's anything that on the galvanization level that an Indiana or that an Auburn could be. But for year one, if you're able to have success, 9-3, 10-2, and pull an upset or two. Like, I look at that game against Michigan. Could that be the game for Penn State where you look back and go, that was it for Matt Campbell, where it really strapped a rocket ship to this and propelled them back into national prominence? But he's got a great opportunity in front of him, and he's done everything right up to this point.
I got to tell you guys, other than the schedule being cake this year, I don't believe anything you guys say here. I don't believe in Matt Campbell. I think outside of 2 years at Iowa State, he's pretty much just a 500 coach. We're talking about all these players he brought with him from Iowa State. Mm-hmm. It was an Iowa State team that was 5-4 in the Big 12 last year and finished tied for seventh. I think Penn State is going to regret the day that they got rid of James Franklin. Because I think it's really hard to win at Penn State in this current landscape. And I think outside of Joe Paterno, if Joe Paterno was never at Penn State, I wonder what our thought of Penn State would be. Because they've never really won anything outside of Joe Paterno.
Well, he was there 50 years, to be fair.
I understand, but
I mean, they won with Rip Engel years ago. So, I mean, they do. There's several factors that have happened at Penn State. Number one is the steel industry crumbled. And Pennsylvania high school football fell off a cliff. I mean, that's the reality of it. I did this study like 15 years ago. If you looked at the high school talent coming out of the state of Pennsylvania in the 60s, 70s, and 80s versus the quality of high school talent coming out of the state of Pennsylvania in the 90s and 2000s, it's night and day. It just night and day. So they don't have that base anymore. The other thing that they had is they were the Eastern power. They were it. If you were a kid and you grew up in the DMV, you grew up in New York, you grew up in Massachusetts, and you were a football player, you went to Penn State. That's what you did. And the DMV is loaded. So you went to Penn State to play for Joe Pa. That's what you did. I mean, I've been over there a lot. It's a stunningly beautiful campus. They have a ton of money. The Pagulas are there. They've got, you know, CEO of U.S. Steel. Like, they've got money willing to spend. It's a bit of an outpost if you're not from the state of Pennsylvania. If you're not from the DMV, then it's not so bad. But facilities-wise, it checks every box. It's the most SEC place that you can be. Now, your point on Franklin is valid. They may rue the day that was the case. But it also felt like to me that from alumni over there, that even if it was a change to a similar result, they needed change for change's sake. That Franklin's message had run out of potency over there. They'd heard enough. They were tired of never beating Ohio State, tired of never beating Michigan. Maybe they're not entitled to that. Maybe they're not. Historically, would say that they are every once in a while. Maybe they're not. But I think it was just a point with Franklin where it was like, I can't keep doing this. Doing the same thing every year, expecting a different result.
And I get that. I just don't think Matt Campbell's the guy at Penn State. And
it's fair.
I will say this. If they go 10-2 with this schedule, somebody's 9-3 is better. They shouldn't be in the playoff if they go 10-2.
Yeah. This is the age-old question with Penn State. And, Reese, you've been with me with a long time. And I've been saying this for a decade. I think that they should be better than they are. And I think at times I think they should be better than their own fan base thinks they should be.
We want better for them at a lot of points in our history, a recent history, than they've wanted for themselves. Yeah,
I think so. And you go over there, and I don't understand it. I don't know why they're not. I don't, because it's a pretty special place, and it sucks that they're not on the schedule every year, because I think that Ohio State should play Penn State every year just like they play Michigan every year. And I understand it doesn't go back 100 years, but my God, you played the Big 33 game for years. The two states have so much in common, share borders, all of it. So hopefully Matt Campbell brings that back. And by the way, Bake, there's a wide range of opinion on Matt Campbell. Some people think that if he was the coach at Michigan all those years ago, they would have won national titles, would have been all of that. And some people are like you that are like, this guy was, he's a used car salesman with no charisma. Like, it could be both. We'll see. Rich Scarcella with his perspective coming up in 17 minutes. We'll hit the categories with the Nittany Lions coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Old days when people lived to be 40. You only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube. Ooh, just to name a few. Live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking at sunny to partly cloudy skies here for today with highs into the upper 80s this afternoon. Also tracking the chance for a few showers and storms mainly in the afternoon east of Interstate 71. We'll see more of the same here for your Thursday with highs into the upper 80s and some sunshine around. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Ohio State fans, your first look at the 2026 Buckeyes is here. Join us tomorrow through Saturday at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center for Ohio State football training camp. It's presented by Safe Light and Bob's Discount Furniture. The Fans live training camp broadcast begin tomorrow, 6 a.m. T-Bone and Tyvus, Morning Juice 6 to 8. We are there 9 to noon, which is the exact time of the practice window. Kind of a win for us. Saturday Fan Sports Saturday with Reese, 10 to 1. If you want to go, you can still secure your spot today at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Don't miss your chance to be part of Buckeye Nation's kickoff to 2026. Gates open at 8 a.m. Practice kicking off at 9 a.m. Time for the categories on the Nittany Lions of Penn State. Played one years ago, before I was here, I played one season with Penn State on NCAA football. Pretty sure, was it Chauffee Fields, a receiver, maybe, that was there? Like, way, way back. Could have been. College football adaptability grade for the Nittany Lions, Reese.
I'm going to give them a C. It's average, I'd say, at best. Yeah. I don't know how together their alum, their donor base is. I know they're trying that Beaver Stadium Tunnel Club, but it's also too early to tell, you know, where they are getting recruits out of the transfer portal with NIL deals, because Matt Campbell hasn't had the chance really to recruit anybody to Penn State. And also they missed out on their number one pick for the head coach of the Nittany Lions. So, yeah, it doesn't feel like they have all their ducks in a row yet.
Yeah, I think it's a C, and I think some of that may not be their own fault. I think there are just some limitations to Penn State now, unfortunately. I know they have a little bit of money and some donor base, but it's so far out there, and it's so hard to get to. And I think those things hurt it a little bit, so I've got it as a C as well.
Look, it's no more hard to get to than Texas Tech. So if you're organized, in fact, it's much closer to a lot of places than Texas Tech. If you're organized, you can... you can do it anywhere, and you can absolutely do it at Penn State. Now, I think C might be generous based on what we've seen. It might be more like D plus. Like to me, they feel wildly disorganized. And we knew that there was even beef on the board with Joe Pa's kid fighting with other people. Like they got a mess behind the scenes there that I think is really holding back the program. I think the program's better than the people running it at the moment. And I'm talking about the people in power, not necessarily Matt Campbell. I guess we'll see on him as well. Uniform brand grade for Penn State, Reese.
I think the uniform's an A. I think the brand is, they're a laughing stock right now. And again, still stuck. I think there was a Yahoo Sports article a couple weeks ago that was talking about them still being stuck in the Joe Paterno era. And that's something that's going to take a lot of time to get out of. So it's a B minus, C plus.
I'm a little more generous here because I just think the uniform is so classic. I think it's one of the uniforms when you think college football that pops into your head. So I'm going to give them a B plus here, very weighted towards the uniform.
Yeah, I'm kind of where you guys are. I think the uniform is great because of the tradition of it. Like, my kids hate it. Like, they think it's boring as heck, but I like it because it's been around forever. I will say with it, when you go to their campus, you go to Beaver Stadium, you go to the football facilities, like you bathe yourself in incredible history. Now, there's also the Sandusky stuff that they can't ever shake. Like, that's going to be a part of it. And as long as Jay Paterno's involved over there, that's going to be a part of it. So that hangs over a little bit everything for everybody who isn't a Penn Stater. Historical player you'd pick off of from Penn State to play on this Penn State team, Reese?
Go with Saquon Barkley.
So there were two that came to mind right away, and Saquon was one of them. I think they're, and I know Tony Rojas is very good, but I think their running back situation might be a little better. The two they got there than the pair with Rojas at linebacker. So give me LeVar Arrington to pair with Rojas. He can even come off the edge a little bit, and that would help their defense tremendously.
How cool is he in that 11?
Looks so good.
So good, man.
And he was a monster.
Yeah. He was a monster. Yeah, I mean, him and Courtney Brown went 1-2 in an NFL draft off the same team. I'm going to go on the Wayback Machine for Kajana Carter here. I think Kajana Carter was one of the best college running backs I've ever seen. And then he just tore up his knee in Cincinnati and you never got to see it. But he was the number one pick in the draft as a running back, which tells you about all you need to know about him. But so there's a lot of great talent to pick from when you talk about Penn State. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard in State College, Reese?
No, it's an F.
Yeah. Yep, I don't think so. No way.
No, it isn't. It's that, and I think this is the thing. I think you have a really valid point on Matt Campbell, and I think this is the, we just need to see, and we can talk about this now as we get to the coach grade. This will lead into me asking you about the coach grade, Reese. Like, is Matt Campbell capable of selling a blue blood or a borderline blue blood? Can he walk into a door against Ryan Day and win?
No, not right now.
We haven't seen him
do
it.
Maybe not ever with Ryan Day. But he's not punching there yet. I think as with the schedule they have, if they can win and they can be in contention for a college football playoff spot this season in year one, and you can build to something, but you have to do it now. Like there can't just be a, you can't go in and preach patience either to this fan base. You have to go in and say, we're looking to win. And then you have to do it. Then maybe he's never going to be on the level of a Ryan Day, of a Kurt Cignetti, of a Kirby Smart, of a Dan Lanning. He won't reach that. But he can work on it, I'm going to give it a B minus. C plus, I was thinking about it, because again, he wasn't their first pick. He might have even been their second or third. They lost out to Crumble Cookies for a coach.
I'm giving it a C plus, and I know it probably sounds like that I hate Matt Campbell. I don't. I just think he's an average, maybe a little above average coach. Like when you put him at Toledo, yeah, he's going to be good at Toledo. When you put him at Iowa State, he can have a couple years. I just feel like Penn State should want more.
They did. They couldn't get it.
James Franklin was in Penn State for was at Penn State for 12 years. He had five seasons of 11 or more wins, another one with 10, and another one with 9.
I don't think that's coming with Matt Campbell.
It's so stupefying how quickly they pivoted off of him in 2025 after they had that run to the national semifinal. They finished fifth in the country, returned Aller. Aller gets hurt, and then it just all went to hell, and he ends up on his rear end. Now he's at Virginia Tech. I have no idea if Matt Campbell can handle this job. I really don't. I couldn't possibly have an answer for it. To me, this feels like a C plus two. He's going to have to prove that he can be a big boy coach and invigorate a fan base and get NIL organized and get boosters on his side and recruit in a way that he's never had to recruit at Iowa State. So he's never had to do this before. He's never been asked to do what he's going to be asked to do at Penn State. Sliding doors moment for Penn State. Reese.
I'm torn because in 2011, Penn State was really good. Then the Joe Pa scandal breaks. Yeah. They beat Ohio State that season, but the last four games, they lost three of the four, and it all everything just went south from there. But 2016, man, had that Penn State team, Big Ten champions, made the college football playoff when it was still a four-teamer, yeah. I'd be interested to see how that went because Ohio State made it despite the only loss to that Penn State team and then got shut out by Clemson.
Mm-hmm. I think the sliding door moment is when Joe Paterno was hired. And you mentioned, Bo, he was there for like the next 50 years. And
right.
Penn State did win some games before Joe Pa, but I don't believe they won any national championships. And I don't believe they were a national power. And I don't believe we would still think about Penn State the way we do right now without Joe Paterno.
Could be. I mean, we'll find out about all of that. I remember being in the press box for an Ohio State noon game when that doc dropped with Sandusky. And we were all waiting for a noon game. And, like, it was kind of going around, like, Doug and Tim and Dom and Clay and Jared and all these guys were all sitting there. Are you seeing this? Is this real? Is this this is going on at Penn State? Like, I'll never forget that. The sliding doors moment is Justin Fields. James Franklin had Justin Fields committed to Penn State. If he had kept him at Penn State and paired him with the talent that was there, are we having a very different conversation around James Franklin? Because the one thing Franklin could not do is land that type of quarterback. Couldn't do it. He landed it with Aller later, but Aller wasn't Fields. He had Fields. That's the one to me. Win it all, make the playoff too soon, flame out. What do you
got, Reese? It's too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon. Like I said, Bo, I think best case scenario, even with this soft schedule, is 10-2. And I don't think 10-2 with this schedule deserves to be in the playoff.
I think that's fair. I think it's probably too soon as well. I don't think this is Michigan in terms of the Grand Canyon gulf between good or bad. I see no scenario where they're worse than 8-4. I just can't see that. Maybe 7-5, but yeah, I think it's probably too soon too. And I think Bake brings up a good point. If they're 10-2 with that schedule, and there's a 9-3, for example, a Buckeye 9-3 team, if somehow that were to happen, these two are not playing similar schedules at all. A man who knows it and knows that program better than anybody will join us in 2 minutes. Our great friend Rich Scarsella coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
20 most interesting in-state college discussing the Nittany Lions of the Pennsylvania State University. And when we talk Penn State football, we do so with our great friend Rich Scarsella, covers Penn State at the Reading Eagle, and he joins us. Buddy, it is always great to talk to you, my friend. We are doing so under a very different world than we previously do. No James Franklin, so it is Matt Campbell. He's been there for 7 months or so. What have you made so far, the new coach?
Well, I'm impressed with him in some areas, such as trying to create his own culture, stressing accountability, discipline, those types of things. He's doing his best to establish his culture, and probably the one he had at Iowa State the last 10 years. I think he's a down-to-earth guy, obviously a different style than James Franklin, who was more out there, more, put himself out there. Matt's low-key, down-to-earth, kind of an old ball coach, which I think is what Penn State needs at this time.
So in terms of and look, anytime you get a job like this, you got to be honest to themselves, to yourself. And it seems like Matt's doing that. He's an Ohioan. I know he wanted the Michigan job really bad several years ago and was not able to get in on that. So the Penn State job kind of falls in his lap a little bit. Wasn't the first choice over there. The one question I have, Rich, is, I mean, I have many, but one of them I have is he's never had to recruit or build a program in a blue blood situation. And Penn State is that. So that comes with some schmoozing. You got to get NIL on board. You got to get boosters on board. You got to invigorate a fan base. You got to be able to contend on the recruiting trail with the Buckeyes and the Wolverines and all of that. Do you see the kernels of that with Matt early on here, that he's able to do that?
I do, Bo, but I you see little things. They've been in on some four stars, a lot of four stars. It's a completely different situation than Iowa State, which is one of the, as you know, one of the least resourced programs in the country. Totally different. But his strength, he says, and he said this last week to a group of us in Chicago, that he feels that they develop players as well or better than anybody in the country because they had to deal with a lack of resources, and that is their strength. I don't think I get the feeling reading between the lines that I don't think they're going to sell their souls and be just to get 4- and 5-star guys just for the sake of getting them. But the guys, they want guys who will fit their culture. But you're right. You still have to have talent to win football games. It's a legitimate question because he hasn't had to do that at Iowa State, or going way back, Toledo.
Last time we talked to you, we were in the middle of the coaching search, buddy, and I know that there were various factions in the board that were, the Jay Paterno faction and all of this stuff in the board. There was a lot of infighting. Did that get quelled a little bit with this? And it has Matt been able to, I mean, that's a big job to be able to make everybody getting on the same page. Do you sense that now everybody is on the same page a little bit with Penn State football?
I get the fact that he's been warmly received. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't think he's tried to get on the good side of all the factions involved, but I will say this. I think the Paterno family has been extremely supportive of him. I know in his office, we had a get together last month, and there's a photo of Joe Paterno in Matt Campbell's office. But I think this is a honeymoon period, because I think there are still some people who are still wondering, hey, can Matt Campbell go 37-11 in his next 48 games, which is what James Franklin did in his last 48 games. I mean, that's a big ask. And we'll see what happens. But I think you're right. I think there was a lot going on. I mean, the search was bungled. He was a guy that should have been identified early on and wasn't for whatever reason. But I think Penn State ended up with as strong a candidate as any.
All right, before we get to this year's team and a schedule mm-hmm. that is really navigable for him, you've been around there a long time, buddy. What should be at their best? What should Penn State football be?
For this year, you're talking about?
Just in general. Like, what should Penn State? Because to me, I think Penn State should aspire to be Ohio State and Michigan. That's what I think they should.
Absolutely. No, they have to aspire to be a championship program. Okay. I mean, the director of athletics made that very clear when he hired Matt Campbell that he made this, and when he fired James Franklin, he's about winning championships, and his job. Pat Kraft's job is on the line. I mean, if Matt Campbell doesn't succeed at a very high level, they have to have a goal of being Ohio State, a Michigan, and now in Indiana. That's as clear as can be. For this year, the schedule it's not as difficult because they don't play Ohio State, Oregon, or Indiana. And it's funny, I said this, if you would have said 10 years ago, Penn State has an easy schedule, but they're playing Michigan, Washington, and USC, people would have laughed. But the point is, it is an easier schedule than it could have been. And, you know, my prediction is I think they're going to go 9-3. I can't see them winning more than 10 games, but I don't think it's impossible either. But, you know, 100%, they have championship aspirations.
Don't feel bad about it, buddy. I think about it 15 times in the last 7 months. I've forgotten that Indiana went undefeated, won a national champion, had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and went number one overall. That takes a lot of getting used to, buddy. So you and I are on the same page on all of that. All right. In terms of this year, we talked about the schedule. This is 22 Iowa State guys, including the quarterback. That to mm-hmm. me, and that's why I'm really bullish on this team. I just think he's not going to have to build a whole lot of culture because he basically brings his culture with him. So now he just needs some other to conform. What have you made and what do you think in terms of Becht and in terms of some of those Iowa State guys that can come in? They were 5-4, I believe, in the Big 12 last year, coming over to the Big 10 this year. What do you make of that talent?
I think it's a deceiving 5-4, 8-4 overall. Becht was hurt for a large portion of the season, had two separate shoulder injuries, one which required off-season surgery, and he had two concussions, yet he didn't miss a game. I think he's a tough kid. I think he is a clutch player. Maybe doesn't have the greatest skills in passing skills in the country, but I think he is a tremendous leader by all accounts. You talk to the kids who came back, or Penn State kids who came back. You talk to his teammates who were with him at Iowa State, and you talk to the coaches, and they cannot say enough good things about his leadership. And I've had one-on-one with him, and he's just an impressive young man. The big thing for Penn State is keeping him healthy because there is not much experience behind him. Alex Mansky is a redshirt freshman who transferred from Iowa State. He missed all of spring practice because he underwent a medical procedure. And then after that, it's a big drop off. So they believe that Mansky will be ready. But no, I think the Iowa State kids have a lot of experience, but they were productive players in the Big 12. Now they're in the Big 10. Let's see if they can do that again.
It is so strange looking at a running back depth chart and not seeing those two. It felt like they were there forever. And then on top of it, I got a former Buckeye in the two deep.
Yeah, you could probably tell me more about James Peoples than I could tell you. But no, right now it looks like Carson Hansen, who rushed for almost 2,000 yards the last two seasons at Iowa State, will probably be the number one guy with Peoples backing him up. And then Quinton Martin, who came literally out of nowhere to star in the Pinstripe Bowl because playing behind Singleton and Allen, they'll be your top three running backs. They feel like that they're in good shape there. They're tremendous at tight end. They have three future NFL, at least three future NFL tight ends. And they're going to use a lot of two and maybe three tight end sets. Defensively, they're much bigger up front. The question is, can they get to the quarterback? That's going to be a big issue. I think their back seven is pretty good, linebackers and in the secondary. So we'll see. But this team has a lot of experience.
they're a much bigger team up front than Penn State teams have been in recent years.
Rich, I'll get you out of here on this one. As an ability for a new coach to set a positive first step, from 30,000 feet, it seems like this is set up for Matt Campbell to have some momentum in year one. We talked about the schedule. You mentioned 9-3. It feels like that there should be, this should be a very positive season for Penn State. It'd be pretty disappointing if it wasn't, would it not?
I think if they win less than 9 games, it'll be a disappointment. Yes.
Yeah.
I do. I couldn't go out on a limb and say they're going to be 10-2, but I got to think 9-3 is kind of the demarcation line. Anything less than that, I would think would be disappointing considering the schedule, considering all the experience that they have.
You're the best, buddy. It's so great to talk to you again. Look forward to doing it again, even though we don't play this year, which is not great. But I'll hopefully check in with you as the season gets closer.
Anytime, Bo. My pleasure. Thanks.
All right. One of the best in the business, our old buddy Rich Scarsella, covering Penn State at the Reading Eagle, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Get you officially endorsed in 3 things coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
State football. Training camp report.
This report is brought to you by Safelite Auto Glass and by Bob's Discount Furniture. As Ohio State gets ready to start practice to prepare for 2026, all eyes on quarterback Julian Sand, who says he feels more responsibility this year.
I think playing quarterback at Ohio State is its own responsibility. It's not, you know, a certain like second year start. It's extremely, it's a high pressure situation. But that's why you come to Ohio State is to become, you play in big games, like quarterback here.
And Sand says there'll also be more work under center this coming season.
Coach Smith has done a lot of things where the quarterback's getting up there, we have multiple plays called, and quarterback, you're able to make the decision on what you want to run and what the defense is giving you and what the look is. So it's fun as a quarterback to have the responsibility at the line of scrimmage.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, 5-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low is $2.99. And of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob.
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
As he prepares for his second season as the starting quarterback at Ohio State, Julian Sand at Big Ten Media Days was asked about what might happen as far as up-tempo players slowing the pace down.
I think we always, kind of can vary, and we can dictate how the game's going. And, sometimes you want to play fast and get the defense on their toes, and sometimes, it calls for a huddle and let's get the right look, and, let's call two plays, let's figure it out what we're going to run here. So I think it's always going to vary. So it kind of depends on the game and what it is.
He says it's also been important to try and get on the same wavelength with a new group of receivers.
It's been a lot of fun to kind of get to know those new receivers and really just work on the different nuances of their routes and things like that, and how maybe they did things at their old place, and kind of teach them how we do things at Ohio State.
Of course, the Buckeyes start practice this week. They'll begin the season Labor Day weekend at home against Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Paul Keels on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Hair volume to sale, Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Bo knows many people.
He talks to the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what do we have on the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, do you like the Ohio State Buckeyes are ranked number one in the 2026 coaches preseason poll? 59% say no.
They don't like it?
They do not.
Why?
They're Ryan Day. Get that rat poison out of here.
Jeez. It's dude, be number one. Be happy with being number one. Even if you lose, it's fun to start number one. It's fun to have a month of being number one. It's fun when you go down to Texas in week two and it's number four Texas hosting number one Ohio State. Like, there's enjoy that.
It's more fun finishing number one, Bo.
It is, but be there both times. Like, enjoy this stuff, man. I think sometimes we don't enjoy quite enough how much fun all it is to be at the top of the sport. Time to hit your officially endorsed. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday. Officially endorsed. Because everyone deserves two Fridays.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
All right, we're going off script. This is one I've been dabbling in this summer. It's called a caipirinha. It's a Brazilian cocktail that Anthony Bourdain put me on to, and when he was still alive, one of his favorites. I've been making it a little bit this summer when it's hot. You need a steel cocktail shaker. You need to put about half full of ice. You need to take two limes and just chunk them up. Like, you don't have to cut them nicely. Just chunk them up. Put them in there. You need to take, actually, before the ice, you need to put it, take that back. Limes in first, then sugar cane, 2 teaspoons of sugar cane, and you just want to muddle all of that up. And then on top of that, you go 2 ounces of Brazilian rum. If you can't find Brazilian rum, white rum works just fine. Put 2 ounces on that. I do these two at a time, so go just double all of these ingredient numbers. Then the ice goes in top, then you shake it, and then you just pour it into a glass. It is refreshing. It is a delight. You get a little bit of sweet, a little bit of bitter with the lime. It's a win across the board, and it is good enough for your officially endorsed as we are into the dog days of summer now into August. Time for three things on a First Friday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So I mentioned this last night. NBC had a little date with his girlfriend and his buddy and his girlfriend, and so we were up a little later than normal. And again, this is where flipping is undefeated. I was looking for something to watch, and at exactly 9:15, Stand By Me showed up on one of the HBOs. Now, I've not seen Stand By Me in probably 30 years conservatively from start to finish. I watched it from start to finish last night. It's spectacular. It holds up in every way. If you're looking for something to watch with, you know, maybe there's a little bit of salty language, a little bit of preteen era-ish, I think it would hold up absolutely. It is as good as I remember it to be.
Where'd you see it real quick? Like what?
One of the
channel?
HBOs. Okay. I think it was one of the HBOs.
It'd be available on the Max streaming service.
It would
service.
Be available on there. Yep, it should be. It was great.
We talked about earlier in the show with Akron giving a season ticket holder the opportunity to script the opening drive of an Akron Zips football game. Well, season tickets for the Zips started just $75. That plus $12.50 for tickets. I guess if you want to, you know, buy a beer, you get a pretty good opportunity if you're a big fan of chaos. I'm interested to see if they see a spike after this announcement.
First thing for me, I don't know if anybody knew this, but Bill Murray's son, Luke Murray, is the new head basketball coach at Boston College. He's been an assistant on Danny Hurley's staff for the last 5 years before getting the job at Boston College. And I don't know how well he's ingratiating himself with folks at Boston College. Kevin Collins and Josh Maurer, they've been Boston College's broadcast crew on the radio for the past 9 years. Collins had been there for 13. Well, they got let go this past week because Luke Murray says he doesn't want anybody or anything associated with the old basketball coach around the program. Well, I'm not sure how much the broadcasters have to do with what goes on the court and the, I don't know, whatever is happening with the program. And also, he did this without even meeting them, even though they have tried multiple times since March. And then he lets them go when the season's about to start and they probably don't have much more time to get a job. I, for one, am rooting very much against Boston College and Luke Murray this year on the basketball court.
And that's shameful. And there's no, I mean, yeah, I don't, that's silly. I would have thought more of Bill Murray's kid. Bill Murray's great. Like, why? That's a very Danny Hurley type thing to do. Danny's got that in him, I think, obviously. Number two for me, so NBC had his first scrimmage of high school football last night. It was inter-squad, so they went freshman against sophomores. Let's just say a bit of an eye-opener and a bit of a difference between 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds going on 16, and 14-year-olds going on 15, to say the least.
Second thing for me, it looks like LIV Golf is ALIVE, according to LIV Golf. Scott O'Neill had the announcement, I want to say earlier today. They're doing a tournament in New Jersey. LIV Golf is an agreement in place with a lead investor, signed by the investor and approved by the board to anchor the transaction and play a key role in supporting the path forward for the league's next era, driven by and for the players.
Okay.
Just who has $250 million to light on fire? Like, good
that's
for
what
you
I know.
If that's what you're doing.
Who's got that? Are those contracts? Because there was talk that some of those contracts those guys signed are not going to be validated. So who knows?
Name names. I don't believe it until you name names here.
Yeah.
Mr. O'Neill. Second thing for me, our buddy Nate Davis, who covers the NFL over at USA Today, put out USA Today's NFL record projections earlier this morning. He's high on the Bengals as well, Bo. He has them winning the AFC North at 11-6. He has the Texans and the Broncos as the top two teams in the AFC going 12-5. He is very high on the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. He has them tied for the NFC West at 14-3. He's got the Bears at 12-5. He has the Lions bouncing back with an 11-7 season or 11-6 season. He also has the Chiefs bouncing back at 11-6 as well. Not high on the Dolphins, the Cardinals, or the Raiders, as he has them at 1-16, 2-15, and 3-14, respectively.
Good grief. We're up against it. No time for three, so a collective three will be. We'll see you tomorrow at Buckeye Camp, kids. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on